Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
In Hollywood's golden era, both his parents worked in the entertainment industry. His father, Jack Mullen, was a well-known and well-respected publicist back in the days when they were known as press agents. His mother, Jane, was, for a time, an assistant to the great entertainer, Jimmy Durante. Mike Mullen went on to get an appointment at the Naval Academy, where people like Virginia Senator Jim Webb were among his friends and classmates.
Let's pause right here. You're listening to a report from National Proletariat Radio on our Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen, who was sitting there wringing his hands and working his iPod while the Navy of the country of India had to take care of business. That's why we were playing the theme song for the Indian Navy, or their anthem, whatever you want to call it. Apparently, our Navy is very busy wondering what to do because they have rule books to follow. They're run by a PR agent appointed by President Bush. And they haven't yet decided how to take on the pirates. So the Navy of India took on the pirates, and somehow they managed to get a ship back. But Mike Mullen is busy there working his iPod, reading the rule book. And that's the state of the world today. So let's go back to a report on Mike Mullen. Mike Mullen, iPod operator.
Some of the PR lessons he learned from his father, who died in 1972. For instance, Admiral Mullen, known to enjoy his iPod, figured it was a good way to connect with sailors. So he started a weekly podcast.
Welcome to the Chief of Naval Operations podcast for July 16th.
In a recent podcast, Admiral Mullen talked about meeting with sailors and their spouses at the San Diego Naval Station.
We get great questions, great engagement, and some of those things come back and have a significant impact on Navy policy.
Now, I don't know Mike Mullen, but I think that he's a failure as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Not only do I think it, I know it. I think he's a complete flop. He doesn't have the necessary go-for-the-throat mentality that's necessary in a military man. That doesn't mean he's not personally a good man or not personally a brave man, nor does it cast any aspersions upon the fact that his father was a PR agent and his mother worked for Jimmy Durante. Let's hear the Jimmy Durante song on the Savage Nation.
I didn't kiddie, I didn't kiddie, I didn't kiddie. Oh, what a tune for crooning. Ink, I didn't kiddie, I didn't kiddie, I didn't kiddie. It's not the whole world's spooning.
So Admiral Mike Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff with that very nice PR voice, is the same man who created military contacts with China that were astonishing. They were jaw-dropping. He was the same one who let the Chinese spies enter our ships with cameras and got nothing in return. Mullen, back in May of 08, said he wants to continue education, training, and exercise cooperation between the United States and China, and small steps taken at the very senior level between the leaders and between the militaries that work together. And so he let the Chinese smile at him and go click, click, click all over our ships. And you know what he got back in return? I don't have the capacity to tell it to you in plain English because this is a radio show. So that's who's running it now. Mr. Public Relations is running the military. As a result, we have ships that continuously circle in the Gulf of Aden, circle in the Gulf, circle and circle and circle, and don't fire a BB gun. That's who's in charge of the Navy. And by the way, that's exactly why we are in trouble as a nation. The same mentality of MBAs, button-down guys, button-down MBAs have been appointed by Bush throughout the entire government. So you have Paulson robbing the country blind, paying off his cronies. You have the financial collapse today, another 500 point down, almost 500 points down. You have a country melting down on every level. Why? Because of George Bush. I keep repeating to you over and over and over again. George Bush destroyed America. George Bush has not finished yet. You think it's over? You're mistaken. I warned you 3 months ago that he's not through yet. You've seen nothing yet. So you look wherever you turn, you pick up Iraq. Why is the Navy impotent? Why is the Navy not acting? Why are the pirates acting up? Answer, a George Bush appointee, Mike Mullen. And Mike Mullen is a graduate of Harvard Business School and earned a Master of Science degree from the Naval Postgraduate School. Now, that's all well and good, but that's a textbook admiral. It's a textbook admiral. Where is the war hero that we need? The war man, the military man, the man who takes aggressive action against the pirates. Answer, they're to be found in India. Okay? But the lead story today is not this. The lead story is that Hitler had one testicle, which came out today. Apparently, it's not really a lead story. It was in the top three. I don't know whether to balance that out. I don't know. I mean, the only response to the fact that they said that they have proof, medical proof, that Hitler had one testicle is to say, thank God he only had one. Can you imagine if he had two? I mean, that's the only response I had. The real big story is that the gay mafia has shopped the ballot initiative, Prop 8, to the black robes in the California Supreme Court. Gays shop marriage ban to California black robes. So in other words, democracy hangs like a loose tooth in America. The voters be damned. The attorney general has broken the law. The governor of the state of California has broken the law. They're fundamentally both lawless men, in my opinion, by siding with a mob, a rabble of gay radicals, and telling the people to drop dead. And remember what I said to you here. This is not just me. 52% of the people in the state said no to homosexual marriage. 70% of black voters said no to gay marriage. 90% of Chinese voters said no to gay marriage. Yet Jerry Brown, Moonbeam Brown, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and a few judges will say to the people, drop dead, your votes don't count. Whether you understand what's involved here is whether or not we have democracy or whether we have tyranny. Because if they throw this ballot initiative out and we let those filths in black robes do it again, I don't know what's going to happen. It's up to you what happens. I mean, whether there'll be 100,000 people at the state capitol demanding that the judges be impeached, or there's nobody there. All I know is it means that democracy is over. When you have Henry Paulson in the Treasury Department literally making up rules as he goes along, rewarding his friend, writing new tax laws, you have lost your democracy anyway. So what's left of America after George Bush's 8 years and Clinton's previous 8 years? Well, what's left is Obama. Enter Obama, stage left. Now, many of you think that Obama represents change. That is because you're deluded potheads and you don't understand that you've been used as useless idiots. You are the useless idiots that Marx wrote about. I've modified it. Marx said that you were useful idiots, but I say that you are useless idiots. Now, why do I say that? Why could I make such a statement like that? Because if you look at who's in the running for Obama administration jobs, virtually all of them work for Bill Clinton. Duh. You thought you were getting Obama. You know what you got? You got a doorman to the Clinton administration. I'm sorry to put it so bluntly. It seems to me he's picking one person after another who worked for Clinton. But it gets even worse. Wait, it wouldn't be so bad if they were just simply Clintonistas, which they are. We know who they are. He picks Tom Daschle to be the Health and Human Services Secretary. Tom Daschle is an attorney with a law firm that is a lobbying firm for health care companies. Obama's selection of former Senator Tom Daschle, D. South Dakota, to head HHS appears to flatly contradict his own ethics policy, which says, quote, no political appointees in the Obama-Biden administration will be permitted to work on regulations or contracts directly and substantially related to their prior employer for 2 years, close quote. Tom Daschle happens to be a special public policy advisor in Alston and Byrd's Washington, D.C., according to the firm's website, which singles out health care as an area of particular emphasis. Elsewhere, this firm that Daschle works for advertises that its health care legislative and public policy team, quote, has the significant advantage of including two former U.S. Senate majority leaders, Senators Bob Dole and Tom Daschle. Bob Dole is a long-term prostitute, that we know. His expertise is Viagra and the United Arab Emirates. Now, I would like to know how the transition team of Obama doesn't understand that they are violating their own ethics rules. The answer is, what do they care? That's all. Daschle appointment appears to contradict Obama ethics policy. You don't have to be a Democrat or Republican or an independent to understand that Obama lied to you. Eric Holder. Who is Eric Holder? Eric Holder held the hand of Janet Reno while she exterminated 80 men, women, and children. Who else? Who's the White House counsel? Greg Craig. Who's he? Why, he's another Washington lawyer lobbyist. Who was he? Why, he worked for Bill Clinton. Rahm Emanuel. Who is he? Why, he worked for Clinton. Other leftist appointments, Tom Daschle, Hillary Clinton, John Podesta. Who's he? Why, he worked for Clinton. Who else? Ron Klein, chief of staff to Joseph Biden. Why, he worked for Clinton. So the whole team is a Clintonista team. And there it is. And that's the opening. We got everything from a Navy that's, let us say, unable to act because they have a PR man running it, Admiral Michael Mullen, to a state that has said drop dead to the voters and is shopping it to five black robes in the state, the so-called Supreme Court. And we have, of course, the violation of the ethics of their own statements. The Clintonistas now in place for the so-called Obama administration. I'll be right back. Savage. Extra, read all about it. Gays shop marriage ban to California black robes. Story number two, it's confirmed that Hitler had one testicle. German medics account confirms Hitler had only one testicle from the London Sun. There are many other stories. I want to clear the air again on the issue of the homosexuality. I'm so tired of it. I'm exhausted from it. I'm so tired of it. We have bigger issues, and yet they're always in your face. They're always trying to shake up society. Never happy with unlimited freedom. They always want it to rechange and redefine. If a man has sex with another man or if a woman has sex with another woman, that's what gets them off. Good luck to them. That's their business. It's not my business. It's not your business. We live in a pluralistic modern society. We don't have to approve of that behavior. We don't have to disapprove of it. We go our way. They go their way. God bless them. They have equal rights to everybody else. However, when you have a small band of homosexuals who want to defy common sense, who want to defy law, who want to defy nature, who want to defy language, who want to defy tradition, who want to defy all religions on the earth and say marriage is not between a man and a woman, but between a man and a man, which is oxymoronic. It's impossible. The whole meaning of this is to destroy the brick of civilization, which is the family. When you destroy the brick of civilization, the entire society crumbles. It's what happened with ancient Rome when Caligula was out of control with his homosexual madnesses. I don't have to go down the litany of madness. It's one thing to permit people to do what they wish as long as it doesn't impact children. It's another thing to permit this subset of the population to overtake the entire society, rewrite society's laws, redefine society, redefine language, redefine every essence of the society. You then have a destroyed society. It atomizes. It falls apart. That's what Proposition 8 is all about. The people spoke, and the gays should stop pushing. I believe they're going to get a pushback that they don't expect. They should stop it. And I believe that the black robes in the Supreme Court should stop it. They're going to get a pushback they don't expect, and it's not coming from me. That's a huge story. A huge story. Then there's the story of the pirates. Our Navy is incompetent because it's in the hands of a man who is an MBA, who's a PR agent. That's how he got where he is. Don't you understand how it works in the world? The guys who rise to the top usually are the biggest BS artists in the system. That doesn't mean they're bad people. They're just con men, basically, by and large. They're like all of the corporate executives that you meet who never built a company but come in and tell the stockholders that they're going to do this, they're going to do that, they're going to make a wonder. They want them firing people, the company collapses, and they walk out with $80 million. That's the kind of society we're living in right now. Do you understand this? New York City, WOR. Steve, you're on the Savage Nation.
Mike, all right. I feel like I'm the self-appointed Bush defender. But you can't blame him for everything, Mike. You know, let's give the
guy. I didn't blame him for everything, but let's blame him for the impotence of the U.S. Navy. He's the man who picked Mike Mullen. I didn't pick Mike Mullen, did you?
a few minutes ago, you blamed him for this country going in the toilet. And you know what?
Yes, I did. Well, who's been the chief executive? You?
That's why I listen to you, Mike. Give me a chance for a moment, okay?
What was that? Who's been in charge, you or me? He was the chief executive. So if a company is run into the toilet, who do you blame? You'd blame the CEO. Bush is the CEO. What should I do, salute him?
Abraham Lincoln and George Washington had some bad apples, too. Come on, Mike.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know Bush is really in the category of Abraham Lincoln and George Washington. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's right up there. Come on. You got to stop with the Bush worship. It's over, Steve. The reason we have Obama, the reason we have the most far-left senator in American history as president, a man without experience, a man with many question marks hanging over his head, is precisely because the people have said enough of Bush and his cronies. It had nothing to do with Obama for 50% of the people who voted for him. 50% of the people who voted for him loved Obama. The other 50% were running away from Bush and said anything but Bush and anything but another white male corrupt guy like Bush. That's why McCain got tossed overboard. Thanks for the call. Could you play the Indian Naval song for a minute? And I'll take a caller on the Navy. I think I'm going to have Indian food tonight, now that I think of it. I get motivated by the show. Monday I had calamari. Tuesday I had meat. Turn it off. Now, if I have Indian, I'll be up all night for the spices. I won't have Indian. Gruel. I should eat gruel with dates in it. I read a guy's book who said that his grandfather lived to 96 in Newark. He was a poor guy. He had gruel on the stove all the time, an old Irishman who always had, like, oatmeal. And it was always on the stove in a big pot, and he put dates in it. He would chop up dates and let the dates melt, in essence, into the gruel. And he would eat oatmeal in the morning. He'd eat oatmeal at night. He always let it cook on the stove. He added oats to it over. And the man relieved himself twice a day, he said, and lived to 98. Twice a day from the oats. You can't believe it. That it may have everything to do with the gut, your survival, and your longevity. I think there's a lot to be said for it. I mean, I don't want to go there because it'll get into the whole... I don't want to go into flushing and the whole, and the, you know, detox. Then I'm going to get the detox nuts calling, telling me that I should take a coffee enema. I had a nut friend like that. Mummy dust he gave out. Coffee enemas, don't ask. I don't want to go back either to the past with what they did in the old days with the... Kennewick, Washington. Joanne, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, I want to talk about two things. For one, Prop A...
Well, let's go to the second one instead of Prop 8. Go to the next, the pirate story. Ask me the question. I'll tell you no lies.
Okay, no problem. I'm concerned about these pirates. I want to know what we should do to get this policed.
Very, very simple. I put it on the show yesterday. They come out of only a few villages in Somalia. You fly special forces in. You take out the whole village. You take them onto a ship in helicopters. Their wives... their wives, their fathers, their mothers, their children, and you take them out on a ship right next to the pirates on the ship, and you hang them overboard, and you say, "Hi, pirate, here's your mother." You get off that ship, and we're dropping her overboard. It sounds harsh, doesn't it? That's how it worked when the Navy was formed, not with a PR agent with an iPod.
Savage.
One of the challenges that you have in piracy, clearly is if you are intervening and you capture pirates, is there a path to prosecute them? And that's something I think the international community has got to answer for the long run. I'm stunned by the range of it, less so than I am the size. These are pretty. They've proven to be pretty capable. Can get on and off. Lots of vessels. I mean, this is a 300,000-ton, three times bigger than one of our aircraft carriers. But once there's an avenue to be able to get up on it, and it's typically these ships, even that big, don't have that many. You know, the crews are not exorbitantly large. So once they have access, they seem to be able to get on.
All right, it's enough already. It's enough. It's enough already, Admiral Mullen. It's enough. It's an embarrassment. This is why America has become a helpless giant. It's because of this kind of mentality. And so the Indian Navy had to take control of a pirate ship, seize it. They did so. Apparently they can do it. They don't have the same constraints that our MBAs with iPods do. All of our Bushies from Yale, all our MBAs from Harvard, who are probably nice men and good men and Oh, just excellent men, really. But unfortunately, that's not what we need in the world right now. It's as simple as that. Stephen Bakersfield, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, how's it going, man? I just got to tell you, I've been listening to you for about 4 months now, and I'm hooked. I'll admit it, in the beginning, you're an acquired taste, but I tell you, there's nothing. You are highly duplicated, but highly imitated, but never.
Well, you know, I'm glad you said an acquired taste. It's like when you first taste a real beer as opposed to an ersatz, you know, American, you know, boiled over beer. It's like white bread, and then you suddenly get a taste of a real piece of whole wheat. I mean, there's 100 comparisons here. Or it's like I'm the energy drink of radio compared to regular soda. I mean, there's so many. But what are you calling? Which topic?
Calling about the Pirates. And not really a comment, but I wanted to commend you because I was listening to some conservative radio this morning and or today, and I heard a different person, Rush Limbaugh, talk about the Pirates. And he was speaking about it like he was breaking the story. And I'm thinking, man, I heard this on Mike Savage yesterday, man. And I got to commend you because you are the voice, you are the eyes of America, and I commend you for that.
Well, it doesn't matter. But let me, others talked about it. Has anyone come up with how to deal with them other than me?
No.
Not at all. No, they're all, oh, we don't know what to do. Oh, we can't sink the ship because then we'll blow up the cargo and the innocent crew. Well, we don't know what to do. Oh, let's bring them to justice like George Bush wants to bring terrorists to justice. We can't have another Abu Ghraib. We've got to take the high road. After all, we're a Christian. I mean, well, we're somehow a better nation. We've got to lead by example. We're not barbarians. We've got to show them how to do it. We can't be, we can't go below them. I mean, two wrongs don't make a right.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the kind of nation we become, a nation that they don't know what to do. We'll go back to when the U.S. Navy was created. As I said yesterday, it was created to fight the very same Muslim pirates off the coast of Somalia, in fact, off the Barbary Coast, which was northern Africa, because they were raiding merchant ships. They were unprotected merchant ships. The U.S. had to create warships to protect the merchant ships. That was the beginning of the U.S. Navy. I also explained yesterday that the Marines, who were the basically the soldiers who boarded pirate ships, the Marines were on the Navy ships. They were the men who jumped aboard the pirate ships and had it out with these savages. Pardon me. They had leather around the back of their neck. That's how they were called, leather necks, to prevent their necks from being hit with a cutlass and killing them, you know, as a protection, like a bullet, you know what I mean, like a leather band. That's why they were called leather necks. Also, the Marine hymn, From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, came as a result of this. The problem today is that we have MBAs with iPods instead of truly aggressive men running the Navy. That's the problem, Steve. Play the Marine Corps hymn. You don't have it? Montezuma. That's Mexico. Same problems then. We're fighting with the same people already for 200 years. To the shores of Tripoli. Why the shores of Tripoli? Because the shores of Tripoli were where the Barbary Coast pirates came from. Don't you understand? Well, you're busy learning how to put a condom on a cucumber, not how the U.S. Navy was formed. A country like this can't survive. You don't even understand about communism, Nazism, totalitarianism. You know nothing. A nation of morons. You think that homosexuals have a right to marry. They'll be like marrying a stone. Marriage is between a man and a woman. It's not between a man and a man. It's not between a woman and a woman. End of story. I don't care how many different ways you have to explain it to people. They're not victims. They're victimizing society. Oh, my goodness. How can one man do all of this? What else do I want to talk about? 1-800-449-8255. Phoenix Imam, so-called, tells Muslims to disregard U.S. laws. You hear? Why should they not tell them? What are they got afraid of? Another MBA has to consult a book? Tell them not to go through a red light, even. Tell them to go through a red light that is, you know, whatever. Why? Who's going to stop you? Tell them it's in your religion. Tell them it's in your religion. Whatever you want to do, come up with it. It's in your religious book. India sinks Somali pirate ships. How did the Indian do it? How did the Indian Navy sink the pirate mothership? Therefore, failed to stop for investigation, open fire. Because they don't have Admiral Mullen in charge. That's why. That's how they did it. They have a guy closer to the head of a crime family in charge of the Navy in India instead of some schmuck who went to Yale or Harvard. Play Throw Mama from the Train for a minute while I catch my breath.
Throw Mama from the train, a key.
Nah, not funny. Turn it off. You see, that's the problem with talk radio. You try these songs, no one even wants to hear it. It's emphasized, does nothing. An Indian Navy warship has destroyed a suspected Somali pirate vessel after it came under attack in the Gulf of Aden. INS Tabor sank the pirate mothership after it failed to stop for investigation and opened fire instead. So if it was an American ship that they opened fire on, Admiral Mullen would have said, stand down, race away, go to a training exercise somewhere. We'll train, we'll consult the book, we'll come back to Washington, we'll ask Carl Levin. We'll ask Carl Levin, the Senator Carl Levin, what we should do. A guy who never fired a BB gun. Or no, we'll go to Jane Harmon, who's about to be appointed the head of the CIA. Jane Harmon from San Diego, we're going to ask her what she should do. Never fired a BB gun, but she'll know what to do. How come they could do it? How come the Indian Navy could do it? How could they do this? The Navy said the pirates on board were armed with guns and RPGs. When it demanded the vessel stop for investigation, the pirate ship responded by threatening to blow up the naval warship if it closed on it. You hear this? An American ship right away withdraw, lift her skirts and back away. Ooh, we can't afford. It's an election time, even though it's over. President Bush said don't get into any engagements. Don't unnecessarily provoke the pirates because they're Muslims. And although I was walked around by my pinky by the King of Saudi Arabia, I'm not pro-Muslim or pro-Saudi at all. Pirates then fired on the Tabor, and the Indians say they retaliated and that there was an explosion on the pirate vessel which sank. That's all. Then some of the so-called pirates tried to escape on two speedboats. Well, the Indian sailors gave chase, but one boat was later found abandoned while a second boat escaped. See, that's what a Navy is supposed to do. Last week, helicopter-borne Indian Marine commandos stopped pirates from boarding and hijacking an Indian merchant vessel. Not our Navy, though. We spend trillions of dollars training and building. I hear we have 10 aircraft. I was on an aircraft carrier. I've seen the propaganda. We have aircraft carriers. Each aircraft carrier has an air force bigger than any nation on Earth. And we can go anywhere on Earth. And we can stop any activity anywhere we want. But if they send a rubber boat at us, we back up. Our petticoats come in and we back up because we don't want to get engaged, actually. Although it looks like we're tough, we're really not tough. We're like a steroid weightlifter who is not really a fighter. You know the difference between a steroid weightlifter and a fighter? You ever seen the two of them in a ring together? I don't have to tell you how it turns. I learned that when I was young. There were 145-pound tough kids who just looked like lanky steel workers from the 1950s. And then you'd see the weightlifter show up with the steroid, the pumped-up arms, the muscles bulging. And they give him three blows, and the other guy went down. That's what we are, unfortunately. That's the world knows that. That's what America's come to. And it's sickening. It makes me sick. It makes me sick. What's happened to this country under George Bush and Bill Clinton? 16 years of this country has deballed America from top to bottom. So you say, well, why don't you move to India? Stop debasing America. I'll get that too next. I'm considering it. Not going to have Indian food tonight. It's too spicy. I can't sleep. Monday night, just want to get into dietary for a minute. Monday night, I got to tell you, I had an epiphany in cooking in my house. I got to tell you, I'm somehow influenced sometimes by stories. In other words, if I tell a story about Italy or Italian, I wind up eating Italian food. If that day I'm excited over an Indian story, in India I'll eat Indian food. Monday night, I had gone shopping at my local market. I would give out his name. He's a nice guy, but I don't want people to look for me there. And I said, I can't find calamari steaks. So he said, I got them in the back. They're frozen in a box. He took them out of the box for me with a hammer and a knife. He broke them apart. Then he has a machine. He put each one in a like a package that takes the air out and resealed it with the air out of it. And he gave me five calamari steaks. It cost me less than $2 a piece. Can you imagine how much they cost even retail? I come home that night. I was in a mood for a calamari steak with mushroom sauce. Now, I've never had it served with mushroom sauce, but because the other member of the dinner wanted a steak, not calamari, I said, I want to make a mushroom sauce for the first time in my life. So I defrosted the calamari on the cold water. Never use hot water when defrosting virtually anything, because if you use hot water, you're partially cooking it, which is very dangerous. Only defrost using cold water. And then you take the plastic off, okay, then you dry them, blah, blah, blah. You only cook them 3-4 minutes on each side in a very hot pan with very little oil, or else it'll get soggy. And make sure you got a little parsley chopped up. Anyway, I made a mushroom sauce that was so good. No butter, no cream, and I defy you to know to be able to discern whether there was cream of butter in it. I never had anything like, I slept like a baby. I woke up feeling like I had velvet between my joints. I felt so good that I figured I needed to feel bad. So last night, I ordered bad Italian food from a local restaurant. It wasn't bad. It's old style, like Bronx, Staten Island, Brooklyn Italian food, which is actually a pleasure compared to the upscale, white tablecloth, shishi, bad Italian food kind of restaurants that you find all over, you know, the suburbs. I'm talking meat sauce that's thick, like really heavy, you know, really heavy, like your grandmother made. Your grandmother, not mine. And I got a meat dish, a veal piccata. Then there was, I always eat the other dish on the table. Have you ever seen this going on in restaurants? This goes on for the last number of years. Like, men are on low-fat diets. I love to watch this in restaurants. Men over, like, 40. So the wife usually orders a meal that she knows her husband wants, and he orders something lean.
Oh, I'm lean. Yeah, something not, no salt, and no cream, no butter, no, make it light, make it light. No, no cream, no butter.
So he gets this lean dish. She gets this, you know, gut-busting, phenomenal dish on her side. Knowing that he's going to pick it up late. And the guy always eats her meal from his side. And she picks at his dish. She eats the lean dish off his plate. And he's every minute. The fork is, the boarding house reach across the table to her dish. I love to watch this. It goes on consistently. So I overindulged. I had nightmares last night from the meat. If I eat meat late, one nightmare after another. I had a nightmare. I was on Broadway in San Francisco in my car, which is a great car, and it wouldn't go forward, only backwards. You ever hear a dream like this? I tried to go forward, and it would go backwards. So I said, I got to get this car parked because I'm leaving for Europe tomorrow. I don't know what I'm doing with Europe. Dreams are crazy. But my whole dream was about getting the car parked safely so that the dealer could pick it up the next day. But I knew if I left it on Broadway, they would tow it away that night in San Francisco. So I tried to back it down a street, and it was all full of coal. Oh, my God, what a horrible dream. So as I drove into San Francisco today, I went down that very street to see if my car would suddenly stop and only go backwards. No, but it turned out it was only a nightmare from the meat. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Favorite song from the years I spent in the Fiji Islands listening to Indian music on the squeaky radio.
And what Mercedes? Sister has Mercedes. Husband better earn her. I want Mercedes. A Prius. I want Mercedes. Sister has Mercedes. A Prius. You're not a big man.
In 1815, the American commander Stephen Decatur, and we're talking 1815, sent to stop the Barbary pirates, that was the pirates of those days, in the Mediterranean. He captured the flagship of the Algerian pirates and forced an agreement. When the Algerians later repudiated the agreement, the British and Dutch bombarded Algiers. Now, today, the solution would be to bomb the port of Ail, E-Y-L, which is the main pirate base on the Somali coast. That would stop it. But that would require a UN Security Council resolution. Oh, right. That's really going to happen. So we're wringing our hands. All the laws are written in favor of the pirates right now. The effort needs to be stepped up into a real military gear, bomb their cities, take their families hostage, and it's the end of the piracy. But no, instead we have a guy on an iPod going back to international law, provisions on the UN law of the Sea Convention, Foreign Office in London, but forget about it. What about daring action? How come the Indians are capable of daring action? Answer, because they're not constrained by George Bush's rules of engagement, which is exactly why we were trapped and are trapped in Iraq so long. Do you get it? Now, if you'd rather I talk about an easy mushroom sauce instead of these affairs, fine. Fine. Years ago, there was a firm measures taken against pirates. An expert maritime writer, Dr. David Cordingly, wrote a book called Life Among the Pirates, and he said there would often be a show trial in London, Jamaica, Boston, or Charleston when they were captured. That was followed by a public hanging, and the bodies would be left swinging on the gallows at the entrance to harbors. Sailors would draw the conclusion that piracy was not a good career option. But today, the authorities consist of petticoats, rather than real warriors. And that's the story. So you take your 8 ounces of sliced mushrooms. They could be button or baby Bellas, cremini. I like the whites. You chop them up. Don't quarter them, eighth them, and then even chop them again. You take 1 tablespoon of olive oil. You take a tablespoon of that Smart Balance if you don't want to use butter, which I don't use. You can use 1/2 cup of dry red wine, but I would prefer drinking it instead of wasting it in a sauce. Now, the important part of this recipe is the beef broth. I use organic beef broth. There's nothing like it. You don't want to use anything else. Now, on the side, you get 2 tablespoons of flour ready and 3 tablespoons of cold water. This is going to thicken your gravy. You get your salt, your pepper. You get 1 teaspoon of chopped parsley. I don't like dried. I like fresh. Take the stems off, chop up the leaves. You saute the mushrooms in the oil and the Smart Balance. Now, you could add your red wine. Simmer a few minutes. Then you add the beef broth. Simmer a bit, about 5 minutes. You then take the flour and the cold water pre-mixed, and you whisk it, you know, till it's smooth. You stir that into the mushrooms while they're cooking until it's blended. Then it's almost done. Another minute, thickened, bing. If it's too thick, add more broth. And then you add parsley and salt and pepper, and you got about 1 1/2, 2 cups of a mushroom sauce that I think is unbelievable. And you could put it on steak, or you could put it on calamari, as I did. I loved it. That's why I'm talking about mushroom sauce, because if I can't talk about how to run the U.S. Navy, I may as well talk about what I really know. I don't know anything, right? No, leave it to the guy with the iPod. He's the expert. Leave it to him. Like Paulson's the expert on the economy. Oh, yeah. Leave it to him. He'll make a rule up anytime he wants. He can give his friends another billion dollar bonus. 20 million, 30 million, 50 billion. What's the difference? It's your money, right? That's all. They make up rules as they go along. And since nobody's in charge, nobody's at the helm, and the ship of state is lurching and listing because we have a captain who's out of control, not even on the bridge. He's already abandoned ship, Bush. It's like abandoned ship, man overboard. Where's the captain? He's chopping wood in Crawford. He's getting ready to build his library. Imagine the library, Bush Library. It's going to be a top site for visitors, the Bush Library. Like the Clinton Library, the library, L-I-E-B-U-R-Y, I said 10 years ago, but no one heard me. They just stole it 2 years later. Another library. What is a library? It's a slush fund for a former president. A library. They all have libraries. Oh, can't wait to go in and see. I can't wait to hear Bush's tapes, Bush's famous speeches. You know, we have nothing to fear, but, I mean, he's not said anything in 8 years that anyone will remember. Nothing. There's not a sentence said by George Bush that will be remembered, ever. So what do you need a library for? He never wrote anything anyone will remember. He never said anything anyone will remember. So what's a library? A slush fund for former presidents. You know what I'm saying? Oh, yeah, look, I want to give you $12 million for your library. Terrific. Martha, could you please talk to this guy in the barbershop?
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I can't right now, other than the details that I've seen is basically that they have taken the ship, and I'll presume, like other pirates, they will get into some mode of requesting ransom, and that's to be dealt with directly with respect to the Saudi Arabia, and that's how it's proceeded before, and I would expect that would be the case.
Martin!
Us for an admiral today. That's Mike Mullen. Not only is he an admiral, but he is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, speaking about it as though he's in another world. Oh, I suppose they'll ask for a ransom and they'll get it. That's the normal course of events, you hear? This man's in charge of the entire U.S. military. The China must be watching us, realizing they can do anything they want to us. With men like Mike Mullen in charge, the Chinese could take over Taiwan. They could take over the world. I don't think a shot would be fired, to be honest with you. That's the frightening reality that we are living in today. Here we have one ship in the Navy of India that finally did something. One admiral who made a name for himself by sinking a pirate ship. And we have Mike Mullen talking like this, like he's in another universe. I'll presume, like other pirates, they'll get into some mode of requesting ransom. Did you hear this? Now listen to the next question in 04. It gets worse.
Is there any indication that the pirates are have any Al-Qaeda or Iranian backing, or is this simply a group of traditional pirates? And that was a big target they took on.
I've seen nothing specifically with respect to this group of pirates. I have certainly the piracy syndicate that I have looked at in the past is pretty well backed financially. I have not seen any connection to Al-Qaeda or to terrorists.
Oh, you haven't? Well, I'll tell you, Admiral Mullen, I hope you're listening to the show. I realize you're a genius and you have access to all the military. You have the CIA at your disposal. You have the Naval Intelligence Service at your disposal, whose job seems to be to persecute Marines. You have the FBI at your disposal. You have the Naval Intelligence, as I said. But apparently you didn't read the BBC because they clearly make a link between the pirates and Al-Qaeda. I guess you haven't gotten around to that in your security briefings. That's the country that we live in today. You hear this? You hear what's going on in this country? I don't believe it. Go to michaelsavage.com, and you will see India sink Somali pirate ship on the left side. And if you go to that story from the BBC, and the BBC, of course, is a fairly good service, even though it's quite liberal. It's well-written. You will see a connection on the right, a link to pirates working with Islamists, Admiral. It's by Martin Plaut, November 19, 2008. I realize it hasn't hit the CIA yet. But the story's up there. It says Somali pirates have been accused of forming what is described as an unholy high seas alliance with some of the country's Islamist insurgents. I recognize you're a very busy man and that you use an iPod and you have meetings and you have to go to very important dinners. But you haven't read this yet, but apparently the BBC is reporting it. In fact, Jane's Terrorism and Security Monitor says certain insurgents are using pirates to smuggle weapons and supplies, and they'll provide bases in return. Maybe you ought to send that over to the FBI or CIA if you don't have the time to send one of the dummies who works for you to find this. You can read on. It says Islamists have used the pirates to bring in arms shipments and foreign fighters. They also help with bases from which the pirates operate, Admiral. Hardline is known as the Shabab, now have a degree of control over several pirate groups and provide operating funds and specialist weapons, Admiral. And it says as many as 2,500 young Somalis have been trained by the Shabab at points all along the Somali coast, and we're not talking about shish kebab. In the next paragraph, Admiral, we read that the Islamists are using the pirates to train their own forces in naval tactics so they can provide protection for arms being smuggled in Somalia and Eritrea. So, Admiral, I realize that you're a busy man. I realize you have no direct evidence. Play clip four again. You're not going to believe this. It's astonishing.
Is there any indication that the pirates have any Al-Qaeda or Iranian backing, or is this simply a group of traditional pirates? And that was a big target they took on.
I've seen nothing specifically with respect to this group of pirates. I have certainly the piracy syndicate that I have looked at in the past is pretty well backed financially. I have not seen any connection to Al-Qaeda or to...
As I say, no, you haven't seen it, of course, because you see no evil, you hear no evil, and you speak no evil when it comes to radical Islam. That's what you've been instructed to by your boss, who recently gave a speech on religious freedom at the United Nations that was sponsored by the despotic totalitarian regime of Saudi Arabia. And, of course, you've been instructed from the top down, you should hear no evil, speak no evil, and see no evil when it comes to Al-Qaeda, because the people, the dumb people, the idiots, the voters, the taxpayers who pay your salary are liable to put two and two together and realize that radical Islam is at war with us, and you can't have that. I also recognize that you serve as the principal military advisor to the president, the secretary of defense, the National Security Council, and the Homeland Security Council, and none of them have advised you of the connections. But again, as I say, go to michaelsavage.com and you can cut through all of the mustard, and you'll find out that it's not exactly like commanding a gasoline tanker, the USS Noxubee. What it is simply reading the websites that the world reads, and you could find out what the government itself doesn't know. We also understand, Admiral, that you earned a Master of Science degree and an Advanced Management degree at the Harvard Business School, so you're in very good company with other doofuses who get higher degrees and can't manage a hot dog stand. New York City, WOR, Greg, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, long time, first time. First of all, I'd like to state I love my country and I love my Navy. Naval officer, 15 years of broken service. I'm a reserve officer at this time. But I can't deny that what you've said is true for a couple of reasons. One is that over the past 10 to 15 years, Navy has bought weapon systems or command and control systems that want to give control of Navy ships. We've lost our independence to a shoreside battlefield commander.
Oh, a real Captain Kangaroo who sits in a bunker somewhere in Virginia or Tallahassee, and he controls the ship?
Correct. I've seen the systems in play, and they're amazing. But
well, the reason you need to have that is that you don't want to have anyone running a ship who might actually do something with it. You want to make certain that some deballed idiot sitting in a bunker somewhere makes sure the Navy never fires a shot except in training.
This is true, and moreover, the commanding officers of the ships are afraid that if they were to take independent action, they will be fired and lose their careers. And
that's right. You don't want a naval officer to act like a naval officer any more than you don't want a Marine to act like a Marine, because if they do, they get court-martialed by George Bush. Just as a Border Patrol agent who actually interdicts a drug agent, the Border Patrol agents go to jail for 11 years. This is what happened with 6 years of George Bush. We have a completely destroyed United States. That's why, enter from stage left, Barack Hussein Obama, the most radical leftist senator in American history, becomes president because of the incompetence and the corruption of the Bush administration. I mean, to me, it's all one and the same. It's one ball of wax here.
And even under the Bush administration, your favorite word, and mine too, diversity, has been the word of the day in the service throughout DOD.
Oh, yes. I was once a visitor on an aircraft carrier. I couldn't believe what I was looking at. It felt like I was on a high school, a floating high school.
It's very important, and it's taken
That's right. You take a dummy and you tell the dummy that the dummy is supposed to learn how to be a jet mechanic. So if the dummy can't become a jet mechanic, you blame the instructor, not the dummy. The old guy, the master sergeant who's been repairing jet engines for 20 years, has to teach morons like teachers have to teach morons in high school today. They don't belong there. And the important thing, though, is that the dummy remain in the Navy because it looks more like America that way. Isn't that true?
I agree.
Yeah. In other words, the brochure has to look more like America than like an actual Navy. By the way, my friend, I'm sending you a free copy of Psychological Nudity because I just got a note that we have only 300 copies left of this edition. You're getting one of the rare first edition first printings. This is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Let us go to West Virginia. Chris, you've been holding a long time. What's your opinion? What's your point?
Well, Mr. Savage, I'm pleased to speak with you. My point is, I was talking to your screener about how the United States Navy has actually become a little too advanced. A good friend of mine told me two great stories about the Navy. I'll get to the one if I have time, the other. The first one was they were in support of a Colombian drug ship, searching for them. They found one. They got the crew on board. They got the cargo on board. He was aboard a destroyer. Once they were on the board of the ship, the captains and them got approval to sink the ship. Well, they were too close to it, so they couldn't use their guns, and obviously they didn't want to spend their money.
Wait, you lost me. They got the Colombian drug ship and the cargo, and then what happened?
Well, they wanted to sink the ship. They got approval to sink it. So, but it was only about a 30, 40-foot ship. It wasn't this massive U.S. naval ship. So what they had to do was sink it. But the ship was too close to them. They couldn't use their guns, their 3-inch or 5-inch cannon, to sink it. And obviously they didn't get approval to use a $200,000 missile to sink it. Long story short, they had no ability to sink this 30-foot...
Wait a minute. Doesn't common sense indicate you just sail away from it like 500 yards and sink it with a big gun?
Apparently not to them, no. But the long story...
You mean the captain couldn't figure that out? He went, duh, the ship's too close for the gun? He couldn't figure out sail away and fire the gun?
No, he couldn't.
I guess the man who controlled him at the bunker in Tallahassee was out at a cocktail party in Georgetown and didn't figure it out. He had to go to the CIA for that one.
Well, yeah, like he said. They
look, I'm telling you, we're finished as a country. We're finished, and if you think this is bad, it's going to get worse. If you think it's bad now under Bush, you are right. And if you think this is as bad as it's going to be, you are wrong. We are going to get so incapable of defending this country that the Chinese could march in here and take it over without firing a shot. They're already in Long Beach. They already control the Panama Canal. They already have approved, our government, so-called, has approved that the People's Republic of China provide the inspection devices for the Port of Los Angeles. To me, it looks like the Trojan horse is in place. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, we're focusing on a couple of lead stories on the show. One is that the homosexual mafia has stolen the votes of the people of California, and they're shopping Proposition 8 to a few judges who will try to steal the votes of millions of people. I don't know what's liable to happen. I don't think the people are going to take this, but I could be wrong. Maybe this country is filled with such sheeple that the judges and the homosexual mafia will get away with rewriting history and stealing the votes of millions of people. It is to their detriment if they do so, because it means that any ballot initiative can be overturned by any court in the land, which means that when a left-wing ballot initiative is passed, the people will shop it to judges, perhaps the Supreme Court, and overthrow it. So it's a very dangerous precedent, but don't try to tell that to the homosexual mafia or the vermin in the California Supreme Court. They're nothing but low-life lawyers in a black robe who have disguised themselves as something above that. Now, we're also talking about the recent pirate takeover of ships, and I've given you a history of the formation of the U.S. Navy. I've told you about the Barbary Coast. I've told you how they were dealt with in the past. Their town was bombed in the past, and that stopped them. And now we then played the Joint Chiefs of Staff Admiral Michael Mullen, who speaks as though he's in a vacuum. He also said he sees no relationship with regard to this group of pirates and al-Qaeda when the BBC itself reports a direct connection in one article after another, but Mullen doesn't know anything about it. Somalia's increasingly brazen pirates are building sprawling stone houses, cruising in luxury cars, marrying beautiful women, even hiring caterers to prepare Western-style food for their hostages. And while this is going on, the geniuses who run our military don't know what to do. The Indian Navy did something today, thank God. And there it is. And if you think it's bad, you're right. If you think it's the end of the badness, you're wrong. San Francisco, KNEW. Mike, you're on the Savage Nation. Your opinion counts. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just want to make a point about the Navy. I've been years now. I'm ready to get out. And Mr. Mike Mullen is definitely gutless. I totally agree with the statement.
I thank you for the call, my friend. I have nothing else to say. I don't know that he's gutless. I think that he doesn't know how to run the Navy. That's what I say. I'm sure he's a wonderful man, a fine man. I mean, just that he grew up in Hollywood doesn't mean anything. And that his parents were public relations agents for Hollywood stars doesn't mean that he's not capable of being an admiral. Obviously, he's very competent at public relations. Look how far he's gotten. We're also talking about Obama's appointments. They're one Clintonista after another. The biggest scream is Tom Daschle to head up Health and Human Services, because this appointment appears to flatly contradict Obama's own ethics policy, which says no political appointees in the Obama-Biden administration will be permitted to work on regulations or contracts directly or substantially related to their prior employer for 2 years, close quote. But guess what? Obama was just lying to you. He's just using you left-wing morons because he realized he could. The fact of the matter is, you are useless idiots. You always have been. Portland, Oregon, Alexi, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
I want to just say a few words about language. 10 years ago, I came to the United States, and I was listening to your show every day. And basically, I couldn't speak the language yet, but I really tried to do my best, you know, and try to repeat after you. Word, like for some phrases, and after like 5 years, I start to understand everything you're saying, and I'm really happy, you know, when I was, you know, 15 years old, my father died, and I had so many questions, and you, like, answering them, you know, once in a while, you know, some of those things. And
I'm sorry to hear your father passed away. That's what happened to me when I was young. My father died when I was young. How old were you when he died?
15.
Oh, you were much younger. Well, he was the one who was the immigrant to the country. Were you also an immigrant?
Yeah.
Oh, you came together. Well, it's a struggle. Coming to a new country is a very tremendous stress on people. Awesome. Particularly when you come here legally and you're not collecting welfare. It's an enormous stress. It killed my grandfather. Of course, the immigrants today, it's another story. Today they arrive on the shore. They say, me immigrant, you racist, I sue ACLU. And right away they collect the golden parachute before they even worked a day. I'm sending you a free copy of Psychological Nudity so you can continue to learn good English and good stories from my childhood. A true blue American, Michael Savage, immigrant son, from immigrant son to radio star. I'll be back.
Savage.
Story, the Joint Chiefs of Staff head is a guy, he runs the Joint Chiefs of Staff, so he's in charge of the Navy. But he's never flown, so far as I know, a jet from a Navy ship. While you look at the Indian ship that sunk the pirate vessel in the Indian Navy, the ship was called the INS Tabar, which is battle axe in Sanskrit. It's a Russian-built missile frigate. It's actually a small boat of only 4,000 tons. And what's interesting is the commander of this ship, the commander of the Navy, the Admiral Suresh Mehta, assumed charge of the Navy, blah, blah, blah. He joined the Indian Naval Air Arm and extensively flew the Hawker Seahawk from the aircraft carrier Vikrant. Now, how can a man who's not flown jets off an aircraft carrier be the admiral of a Navy? I never could understand that. How could he ever know what a naval – how could he comprehend what dangers a naval aviator face and what a naval aviator needs? How could a modern Navy have a PR man – in charge not only of the Navy, but of the entire military? You have to ask George Bush for that, because only in his wisdom could he figure this out. Only he could figure out why a man like this should have been made chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He doesn't know who the pirates are. He doesn't know what to do about them. He doesn't know that they're connected to Al-Qaeda, even though it's on my website directly linked from BBC. He says they're, I guess, going to negotiate for a ransom. And he has a nice voice. He probably looks great in a uniform. That's all. Yakima, Washington. Isaac, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, how you doing? First of all, I wanted to say thanks for playing the Marine Corps hymn. It means a lot. Our birthday was just recently, and I want to thank you. Two tours in Iraq myself. I am now a recruiter. I see a lot of things that's going on, you know, on this side of the end, on, you know, putting people that are, you know, not all competent to actually, you know, do certain jobs in the military, but as far as the high echelon go, I do think that those guys up there are trying to look over into their political careers and are.
I totally agree, but it's not that different than any other time. If you look back even to World War II, you see General Eisenhower. I think he was a good general, probably a great general. A military historian would probably know more about it than me. But he had his eye on the prize of becoming president. But he was an example of a competent military commander who also was a good president. But there were other generals in World War II who were not competent as generals, but they were very political, and they knew how to get ahead using, you know, political moves, let's put it to you that way. So there's nothing new in that regard. But I've never seen an admiral who doesn't even know who the enemy is. Like in this case where he says he has no evidence to a reporter that there's any connection between the pirates and Al-Qaeda, when it's a clear connection as reported in the BBC. How can he know how to fight them if he doesn't know who they are?
Well, maybe he's just in the bag drinking his wine, smoking a cigar, and laughing about the whole ordeal.
Well, I'll tell you what worries me, Isaac, which is that guys like this look to me like they're looking beyond their naval career for what kind of consulting deal they're going to get after they're out of the Navy. That may explain some of their decisions, such as opening up our ships to let the Chinese military crawl over them with cameras and getting no reciprocation in return. That was done a year ago. I was shocked by it. Maybe he will take a job with a law firm that does business with for companies, that does legal work for companies that do business with China, or a lobbying firm. You see, we don't know how these things work, Isaac.
Michael Savage, I know that, just like I said, I recently started listening to you. Can't wait till you or we start up that third party that we were talking about so long ago. And I do appreciate your work. And
Isaac, I'm sending you a free copy of Psychological Nudity so that you can continue enjoying me in bed tonight. I'm sorry. I had to throw that in since Proposition 8 is in the air. I couldn't resist. There's something else I want to play for you right now that we've been holding since last week. It is still on the log, I believe, my sound log. It's right here. Last Friday when I was in Los Angeles, we had some amazing callers, and one of them occurred in the third hour of the Friday show. It was the first of its kind. I never had a caller like this, and it was so remarkable that I thought that you should hear it. It was Chico, the ex-gang member, calling from Indiana, and I was so stunned by the call, I felt it was worth replaying. And so, gentlemen, please play this clip right now. Chico in Indiana, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage.
Hello. What's on your mind, my friend?
Listen, I want to tell you that you've helped a lot of ex-gang members. And
Really? How did I do that?
Oh, just by the way you talk, your straight talk. And let me tell you, when I was growing up, we had uncles like you who tried to knock sense into our heads. Just
isn't
like
that
you.
Beautiful? I got to tell you, man, I love this call. I love the call because we got cultural differences here. We got language differences here. We got age differences here. And look how you are saying to me that we communicate. That's the most important thing.
Dr. Savage, if you sat in my kitchen table, you'd be just like one of us. Let me tell
you. That's amazing. That is amazing. That is amazing. Well, look, I'm not going to start now by backtracking and say I understand why you did it, but the fact is I understand why you did it. I can understand why some kids wind up in gangs who didn't want to be there, but they had to be there, they'd be dead. That's another story. Not everybody's in a gang is an evil person, and not everybody's not in a gang is a nice person. We understand that as well. Am I correct, Chico?
Correct, sir. Let me tell you, I had to come to Indiana to get out of the state, but I work with gang members here in Indiana, Indianapolis. And I turn the radio on, and they can listen to you.
That's amazing. Well, it's because I reflect. Remember, I'm an immigrant son, Chico. Although from a different culture, I am an immigrant son, so I still see America in a sort of distant way. It's not like I'm Father America. I'm part of something, but I'm also not really there yet. You know what I'm saying, Chico?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Let me tell you.
There's other elements as well, which transcend culture, race, age, language. And those are traditional family values, Chico. I think you'd have to agree with me that when I say that 7 out of 10 black people, for example, voted against gay marriage, and 7 out of Hispanic people voted against gay marriage, even though they may have voted for Obama, it's because their family values and my family values happen to be the same.
That's right. That's correct.
And tell me, what is more fundamental to any man who's really a man other than his family? There's nothing more fundamental.
That's right.
Do you teach the kids, the young guys who are in gangs, that the real tough job is to be a father rather than to be a killer?
That's right, to be a man. To be a man.
Yeah. Any guy could bury his heart and shoot another man and think he's a man, but you know what it takes to be a man? Is not to shoot another man, but to help another man. The healer is a greater man than the killer.
That's right, Dr. Savage.
Do you teach them these kind of things?
I do, and like I say, for 3 hours at night, you teach them in some garages. Sometimes in the garage, I put the radio on, and there you are talking.
I love it, man. I really love it. I wish I could be there with you drinking a beer right now. And I sent Chico a book. I sent him Psychological Nudity, and I'm sure he'll enjoy it, and he'll read it to the guys. And I thought I'd play this for you because it was one out of a 15. I've been on the radio for 15 years. I've had a lot of interesting callers. I'd have to rank this in the top three to five because... Well, because, of, as I say, the cultural difference, the racial difference, the language difference, the age difference, and yet the fundamentals between the caller, Chico, the ex-gang member who tries to get kids out of gangs in Indiana, and I on family values, on how he sees the country, his love for the country. I guarantee you this guy believes in borders, language, and culture, if not as much, if not more so perhaps than I do. And this is what's missing with the politicians. A, they don't connect with the people because they don't like the people. They see you as something dirty. Politicians see you as something unwashed and filthy, something to be avoided like the plague. They want nothing to do with you. They're like entertainers. They're like celebrities who really don't want anything to do with the average person. They hate you. They only use you. They manipulate you. And we're stuck. We're stuck because we the people, although we're supposed to have the supreme power in this country, have been reduced to nothing but peons. We've been reduced to serfs in our own country. I don't mean surfing the internet either. We're not talking about surfing the internet. Look up what a serf is. In many ways, we're not above the serfs of the Middle Ages without any rights. Why do I say that? Here in California, we have a ballot initiative. We vote to ban homosexual marriage. Why? Not because we hate gays. I'm sure some who voted for that do hate gays, but I'd say most of them said we're doing it because we believe in the Bible, or we believe in the Quran, or we believe in the Buddhist teachings, or we believe in common sense, or we believe in history, we believe in family, and we're going to say what's right is right, what's wrong is wrong, and don't redefine marriage for us. Be happy with what you have equal rights, just stop it. Stop trying to redefine society. Stop trying to redefine what marriage means, because it's bad for our children, and it's bad for our society as a whole for you to do this. So we vote, we win. Even minorities who voted for Obama voted yes, they didn't want homosexual marriage. But now the homosexual mafia goes to Moonbeam Brown, the attorney general, who's supposed to enforce the law, who says no, he's in favor of overturning the law. They go to Arnold Schwarzenegger, the fake Republican governor, who says he's in favor of gay marriage, and they shop it to the judges of the California Supreme Court. It just happened hours ago. We are serfs. If we permit a few stinkers in black robes to rob our vote, it means we have no vote. It means we are serfs. It means we are people without a country. Do you understand that? I'll be right back.
A delicious irony in seeing private luxury jets flying in to Washington, D.C., and people coming off of them with tin cups in their hand, saying that they're going to be trimming down and streamlining their businesses. It's almost like seeing a guy show up at the soup kitchen in high hat and tuxedo. Kind of makes you a little bit suspicious. There's a message there. I mean, couldn't you all have downgraded to first class or jet pooled or something to get here? It would have at least sent a message that you do get it.
That's a left-wing congressman, Gary Ackerman, D. New York, chastising American car company CEOs for their private jet flights to Washington, D.C. for the hearings. He's right. I agree with him 100%. Yes, he should tell them how to run their business since they're coming here for money. And saying we need money, so he has a right to tell them to cut back on their jets. But you know they're not going to do that. Why should they? If they've got a country that's willing to give them a handout, why shouldn't they continue to live high on the hog? Who's going to stop them? If you got a guy like Paulson who has not yet been taken out in handcuffs and be given the perp walk while he's pulling off the greatest theft in U.S. This is not the U.S. Paulson, in my opinion, it's one man's opinion, is pulling off the greatest theft in the history of the world. The only time historically that I've seen a theft of this magnitude was when a country had been invaded by a foreign force and the national treasury, the gold, for example, was sacked by the invading army. That's the only comparable case that I can see for a treasury being pilfered to this extent. The extent that I see it going on the Hank Paulson, and yet no one's stopping him. You thought Obama would make a difference? You thought the Democrat? Don't you understand the demon cats are the same as the Republicans? I've told you 1,000 times we have a two-party system with one P under both shells. It doesn't matter who you pick, you're going to get the same management with a different face. That's all it is. New York, WOR, David, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I want to thank you for having the absolute best radio program there is to listen to. I love it when you put in the context of history, like when you talk about things that happened hundreds of years ago or even 100 years ago. And the saying that I remember that I heard you say is, we've learned from history that there's nothing that we've learned from history. And that just amazes me.
Santayana said that those who do not know their own history are condemned to repeat it. We are repeating our history all over again. But today when you talk about Admiral Mullen being let us say, weak need, not using our Navy to stop the pirates, saying he doesn't see any connection between Al-Qaeda, talking in a third person, almost in a vacuum, as though it doesn't really concern him. And I bring up what the Navy, how the Navy, why the Navy was formed. I talk about how the Navy handled it in the past. That's history that's important to the people, David. They have to understand how far we have fallen in order to understand where we must go to survive as a nation.
It's just terrible. And, you know, when you talk about that, the thing I think about is your story about that man with the pet monkey, where the monkey almost killed him because, oh, I got a kind monkey.
Louis and the monkey, that's in, you're getting a free book, by the way, for thank God bringing up a different story in it. Well, there is a metaphor of Louis and the monkey. He thought he had a monkey that he could control. He got the woolly monkey, and they loved the monkey, and eventually the monkey went crazy and tried to kill him, and he had a fight with the monkey and throw him out of the window as a man, and he wound up in Bellevue Hospital for a long period of time because the monkey almost tore him to pieces. There is a moral to that story, which is the monkey on our back. There is no such thing as a wild animal that can be trusted, and you know, you can take that any way you want, my friend, but you're winning a free copy of Psychological Nudity. I have time to give out one more free book today on the Savage Nation. San Diego, Dan, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike, I'm a 26-year Navy veteran, and I've known Mike Mullen. I've worked for him, not since he's chairman of Joint Chiefs. I think he's a very smart guy, but you are absolutely correct. He is not a warrior, and we desperately need a warrior right now to fight against Al-Qaeda, and this whole business with the pirates, it's all connected. We should be blowing these little boats out of the water and sending these people.
Right. So, but remember, he was picked by George Bush to be a Mr. kind of Captain Kangaroo Admiral. But it's even more worrisome because he was made chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, again, with a mentality of we don't have to fight anybody. Everything should be a negotiation and a diplomacy. That's not what a war man does. They're not supposed to be diplomats first. Sure, they should have diplomacy in their blood, but not first, last, and always. There comes a time that a Navy ship has to use its guns. Don't you agree?
I do. And read his first. He put out, as soon as he became chairman of the Joint Chiefs, he put out a directive, his chairman's guidance. Read it. It's all about diversity. There's nothing in there about winning wars. It's all about we got to have.
Uh-huh. I knew it. I could smell it a mile away. Look, he grew up in Hollywood. His parents were public relations agents for Hollywood stars. Fine, nothing wrong with that. He goes to Annapolis, and he moves up the ranks, and now he's the chairman of our entire military. And here he has his first challenge, which are pirates, and he doesn't know what to do. And a reporter says, do you see any connection between the pirates and Al-Qaeda? He says he sees no evidence to that effect. And I have to remind the listeners that it's right on my website, linked to BBC. There's a direct link between the pirates and Al-Qaeda. Apparently, we know things that the chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff doesn't know. Doesn't he get briefings from the CIA, from Naval Intelligence? What's wrong with these people?
Hey, Mike, there's no question. I don't understand in the first place why we have a Navy guy. I'm a Navy guy. Why we have a Navy guy when we're fighting two big land wars in the Middle East? Our enemy is a land.
Well, that's another question. Why was he chosen as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff? Does he have any military experience other than captaining ships?
I don't think so. I mean, he's a good.
Has he ever fought in a battle? Has he fought in Iraq? Why didn't they pick a general from Iraq? Why would George Bush have chosen a pacifist, in essence, a public relations pacifist, to be the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff? What message is Bush sending to the world? Is that what the King of Saudi Arabia asked for?
These guys aren't afraid of us when we got this kind of thing going on. They're not afraid of us.
Look, we're in trouble. As I said, if China is watching, as they do all the time, they're probably sitting there smiling, saying, you know, my friends, they're a paper tiger. They cannot fire a shot without going to some diplomat somewhere back in a bunker. They're incapable of defending themselves against a rowboat with a couple of guys with RPGs. It's very frightening, Dan, that we're living in a world without any kind of barrier between us and these dangerous psychopaths. Dan, I'm going to send you a free copy of Psychological Nudity because at least it's not political in the sense that it tells the radio stories that I have made my name with. And I think you'll enjoy them. One Odd Frank, blah, 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 blah. I don't want to read the stories right now. I hope you do. Incidentally, folks, next week is Thanksgiving. That's when all of the sales of everything starts. Psychological nudity. I have, at last count, only 300 copies left of this edition. They're going to be gone probably by tomorrow or Friday, at which point, fine, you can order the first edition, second printing, which will be the same book, really, but it won't be the first edition, first printing. This is the Savage Nation. We're talking about the sad state of affairs that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen, who has a master's degree but apparently no military experience, says he doesn't know what to do about the pirates, and a ship in the Indian Navy did know what to do. They sank it. What a sad day it is in America.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Truth about me ring, truth about me ring. Truth about me ring, and surely
die. It is the Savage Nation, and we are celebrating today because of a court ruling in my favor, and in the favor of freedom and liberty, and in the favor of the thousands upon thousands of people who contributed to the Savage Legal Defense Fund. You can read all about it on michaelsavage.com. CARES attempt to extract cash from Michael Savage rejected. Or read the ruling itself, Savage beats CARE on fees motion. And this should give you a lot of encouragement about the court system, because the judge was appointed by Bill Clinton. She's a noted liberal, but she found, she found fairly. She read case law, and she threw out their fee motion against me. And we're talking about $180,000 in fees they were claiming. It was ludicrous. So what I'm saying here is, if you are afraid of CARE because you're afraid they're going to sue you, or you're afraid of CARE because of their reputation, and you have a legitimate case, whether you're a city manager, a mayor, or whatever, as we saw all over this country, wherever there's a case of the attempt to impose Sharia law, it's them behind it. It's a very, very suspicious group, and we all know that. However, they have rights just as I do. Listen to this, and I'll read you a few sentences. She said, on August 29, 2008, the defendants filed a motion for an award of attorney's fees and costs under the Copyright Act, and that would be them. And the motion was scheduled for hearing on November 14, 2008. The court finds this matter appropriate for resolution without oral argument and hereby vacates the hearing. Then she goes back to the story. Savage brought suit in this court on December 3rd, 07 for copyright infringement and civil RICO, racketeer influence and corrupt organizations claim against defendants. That would be CAR. Blah, blah, blah. Then she goes on and says, the copyright claim was dismissed with prejudice, while the RICO claim against CARE was dismissed with leave to amend, meaning we had the right to amend it. Plaintiff failed to amend this complaint, and judgment was entered on August 15, 08. Now, we did not amend the complaint in court, but we spent a lot of money amending the complaint, and we were going to amend the complaint, but owing to certain situations that I can't describe on this radio show, I was told by my family to withdraw this complaint. And I think you can put two and two together, given the climate of a certain organizations in this world. Anyway, so I withdraw the complaint. My lawyers try to settle with them. They say they try to settle with my lawyers, but they never did, and we can prove it. And we presented that evidence to the judge. And the judge, I think, did not like their behavior. That's my interpretation. And I'm not going to read you everything she wrote. But listen to this. This is very important. You go down to the end of this case. Blah, 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 blah. I'm not a lawyer, so it's hard for me to find it. Judgment was entered. Court has discretion, blah, blah, blah. It's only 2 pages long. It's on my website. Here it is. I got it. It's lines 18 through 22 of the finding of the judge, which is on my website. And she writes, here the purposes of the Copyright Act were affected only marginally. Plaintiff's Copyright Act claim, that's me, was never strong and was litigated anemically. That's what she's saying, so she didn't accept it. Plaintiff saved his heavy artillery for his RICO claim, which he ultimately abandoned despite having been given leave to amend. Now, here comes the punchline. The action was terminated promptly after resolution of defendant's first motion. Here is the line I've been building up to. While the court agreed with defendants, that's them, fair use argument, there were features of the decision which required analysis. That is a pregnant statement. There were features of the decision which required analysis. That means that had we gone ahead with the RICO complaint, we're not so sure it would have been thrown out so fast, okay? And I am glad to see that the judge at least read it to understand that we didn't just make this up out of whole cloth because we're bad guys. And so I want to thank all of you who have funded the Freedom of Speech Fund. I want to thank America. I want to thank the judge. Now, look, the case is not necessarily over. CAIR can go back to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and appeal the judge's fee motion ruling. However, I'm on the recommendation of several attorneys that it's very, very unlikely that they will be found. It'll be found in their favor because this judge has used case law to say why they're not entitled to a dime. New York City, Steve on WOR. Thanks for calling the show today. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Mike, in denying this Rule 11 motion, this federal judge was saying you had enough ammunition to initiate your lawsuit in the first place, not that you had...
That's right. She said that it wasn't frivolous, as they claimed. They made statements about me that are totally false. They said Savage sues everybody. He makes up cases. The fact of the matter is I'm one of the least litigious people on earth, and I only did this because they were trying to destroy my reputation. And so, therefore, yes, there is absolute merit in what I stated.
Yeah, even at the time, the time is reckoned from the time the lawsuit was filed, and she felt that there was what they call a prima facie case, enough evidence that falls within the four corners of this RICO claim. So,
Aware that this group CARE received $500,000 from Saudi Prince Al-Walid bin Talal, the sheikh whose $10 million relief check after 9/11 was rejected by then-New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani after he blamed U.S. policy toward Israel for the attacks? Did you know that?
Well, they're certainly well-funded in the wrong direction.
Yes. There's more in the article, and I thank you for calling. The group said bin Talal is not a member of the Saudi Arabian government. He is a private entrepreneur and international investor. WND writes, this may be a distinction without a difference. Savage's lawyers argue, since bin Talal is a member of the Saudi ruling family. Quote, CARE is proud to receive support of every individual, CARE argued, as long as they are not an official of any foreign government and there are no strings attached to the bequest, close quote. Well, listen to what WND writes. The UAE endowment to CARE was specifically earmarked for public relations efforts to repair the image of Arabs and Muslims in America after public outrage doomed the Dubai bid to run U.S. ports. So whether you know it or not, because I was the lead talk show host in America on the Dubai ports deal, I was marked by them. Do you understand they have me in their sights and they still do? Do you understand the kind of life I'm living? Do you have any idea what kind of world I live in? Lawyers for Savage argue that CARE may have used UAE funds and other foreign support to attack the radio host. I suggest you read the article, CARE's attempt to extract fees from Michael Savage rejected. It's linked up from WND on michaelsavage.com. And frankly, we have a lot to celebrate, particularly those of you who gave $10, $20, $50, $100, $500, $1,000, or $2,500. I want to thank every one of you if you sent even $1 at the time. This is a victory for me personally, but it's also it's a vindication for me personally, but it's a victory for liberty in the United States of America. It's a victory for the rest of America who will no longer be afraid of this lawsuit-happy group of intimidators. If you have a legitimate case against anybody, don't be afraid. Go ahead and try to find your freedom in the courts of the United States of America.
Savage.
Well, Boise, Idaho. DJ, you're up on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
I'm like, I'm only 26 years old, and I can't relax in a restaurant, but what about a movie theater? Those are the worst for me. I just cringe, because right when I sit down, I see a family with five or six kids that just want to talk throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, they think it's their personal video experience in their living room. Yeah, well, so in my day, we had ushers that went around with a flashlight, and they put it in your eye if you talked. That didn't always work, but, you know, we mocked the ushers, or we threw candy at them, you know. I mean, we weren't all dolls, believe me. But we knew not to talk because the other kids would have gotten into a fight with us if we talked. There was self-control because the audience would have controlled you otherwise.
Well, now I look around and it's like I'm the only one that cares. The audience doesn't seem to care. It's like I'm weird because I'm upset that these parents want to talk.
Yeah, well, I can't even go to. I go to a movie very seldom. I try to go very late at night or off. You know, I went to two movies in the whole year. That's what I watch at home, you know. What do you expect in a movie theater? The lowest common denominator is in a movie theater. They're not the highest. They're not generally not working people. They're either senior citizens or looking for the senior, you know, the $5 ticket. You ever see them line up at 12:30? The Social Security crowd? You don't want to be in there after a Medicare a meal, I tell you that. You don't want to be in that because they cut back on the air conditioning. You could die in these theaters. I had it in the elevator last week, too, in the building I'm in. You don't want to go in those elevators. It's owned by some conglomerate from Boston. I'm in San Francisco. And they told the management not to put the fan on in the elevator. You could just die if you get in the wrong time of day after the seniors had visited for the medication, whatever they give them, Metamucil. I don't you know, you take your life in your hand in the elevator. What are you going to do? I don't mean when they're in there with you. I'm talking about after they get out and you get in and the elevator starts to climb. What are you going to do at that point? It's like San Quentin. It's like the gas chamber. I mean, there's nothing you could do. You're finished at that point. You got to climb, you know, a certain number of stories. You come out with your eyes smarting and gagging. But that's people today. They don't care.
Savage.
If you look at the Middle East, you can take the pictures and you can distort them in any way you want. You can make Israel into the aggressor. You can make the underdog Israel into the overdog. And the media is doing it. What's amazing to me, and we have the montage here, is that the media is actually taking the side of Hezbollah, even though the Arab League and even though the Saudi Arabians, even though the Egyptians, even though the Jordanians have taken the side of Israel, saying to Hezbollah, you started this, now finish it. Even though this terrorist group is hated by every civilized person on the planet, the scum in the media in America has taken the side of Hezbollah. What more do you need to know that you already don't know about them? You may say, why did they do this? I have said liberalism is a mental disorder. Maybe that's one explanation. All the years of marijuana could explain it. I really don't know why they would support people who would slash their throat like a sheep going, bah. So I'm going to get into the Middle East in a moment. But I want to show you that numbers don't lie. Matt Drudge does lie with numbers. So let's start with the heat wave. Many of you will think, wow, it must be global warming, man. The kids are using fire pumps in the streets, the hot streets. When I was a kid in the Bronx, we opened up the fire hydrants because it was so hot. Now, that's not factually interesting. It's just an interesting anecdote. So let's look at the facts. Here are the facts. I looked up the record highest temperatures by state and by date. And it proves that Al Gore lies and global warming is a lie. Okay, for example, I'll go by state for you. Alabama, the highest temperature on record, 1925, 112 degrees. Alaska, 1915, 100 degrees. This is before really cars were in Alaska, like 1915. What could there have been a few hundred cars there? 1936 was a very hot year. Arkansas, 120 degrees. California. What was the hottest year in California? Why, it was 1913, long before the Model T Ford. 134 degrees in California, in Greenland Ranch, California. 134 degrees, but what is the important date? 1913. So let's go to Colorado. Is it global warming? What's the highest temperature on record? 118 degrees. When did it occur? Yesterday? No. 1888. Before automobiles were on the roads in Colorado, it was 118 degrees in 1888. Now, I'm a man who's trained in science with a PhD from a real great university. So to me, I like to do my research. And I'm going to get to showing you with this how they distort everything. 1888, Colorado, 118 degrees, and so on. 1930, Washington, D.C., it was 106 degrees. 1931 in Hawaii, the record, 100 degrees in Hawaii, 1931. 1934, Idaho. Remember Drudge tried to tell you that North Dakota had broken all records? Well, that's Drudge for you, a high school dropout. What does he know about anything? He's a web guy who makes stuff up, apparently. And he's a company girl for WABC, so he lies, tries to distort the numbers, because he's part of the cabal that hates Michael Savage. So let's look at North Dakota. Highest record on temperature, Matt Boy, 1936, Matty Boy, 121 degrees. 1936, Boy Chick, 121 degrees. 1898, Oregon, 119 degrees. I know you want to talk about Islamofascism, and I will. But this is very important. 1898 was the record high temperature for Oregon, 119 degrees, long before Al Gore's great-grandfather was Randy on the ranch. 1936, South Dakota, 120 degrees. 1895, Mormon country, Utah, 1895, 117 degrees. Have you learned anything from this yet, boys and girls? The year 1900, the record's broken, Wyoming, 114 degrees. Those are the temperatures in the United States by state, the highest temperatures on record. So before you start talking about, wow, it must be global warming, you better look up the facts. Now let's move to the next set of facts, since I am a man who believes in data. The radio ratings have just come in. And what's important is the truth. In the 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. slot where I am broadcast live on WOR in New York, in the audience, the largest audience of people 12 and above, I'm number one. That's WOR number one, WABC number two, WCBS number three, WFAN number four, WINS, grew up with that, number five, WFNY number six, WLIB number seven. That's a ranker for the 6 to 9 p.m. numbers, the actual ratings, not distorted by a high school dropout who has a big website. And that's all you need to know. Michael Savage is, in fact, the king of New York City radio, and I don't need anybody else to tell you about it because my audience is enough. Now let's move to the Middle East. We've got war reportage from the Middle East that is being distorted the same way radio numbers are being distorted, the same way temperatures are being distorted, as you will hear in the following montage. Listen.
Just an update on what you believe the situation is in the Middle East right now. Has Israel overreacted, as some have said?
Actually, yes. The feeling in the Middle East, Israel is overreacting, and it does enjoy the support of the United States.
A lot of people are wondering and emailing us and saying, why is Israel holding the Lebanese government responsible for something that they may not be responsible for and likely aren't?
There is growing support for Hezbollah, especially for Hassan Nasrallah. He is emerging as a leading voice for a large amount of disenfranchised people who feel that this just highlights an ongoing struggle that has happened within this region.
Collective punishment against all of Lebanon and Palestine.
It's somewhat surprising that after a week of being pounded by the Israelis, the Katyusha fire continues unabated.
Israeli warplanes pounded more targets in and around Beirut today, bringing the death toll in Lebanon to at least 183.
We witnessed for many hours this morning, and we've heard for many hours throughout the rest of today and tonight, fierce barrages of artillery fire directed at what they say is trying to neutralize the Hezbollah capability.
Yes, yes. Christian Amanpour. A man really needs to pour a big one when he takes a look at
Savage.
Her.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
1-800, there's a fly in the studio. I like to kill it. I can't get to it. Don't you hate flies when they get... And I'm the kind of guy that lets flies out of a window, if I can. There's no windows here, no screens. I want to just kill it with a newspaper. In 2 minutes, you're going to hear me running after a fly. I hate flies. I hate them. They remind me of liberals. They always buzz around. They leave fecal matter everywhere. They supply nothing positive to the environment. You know, they're always buzzing. A bee I don't even mind as much as a fly. A bee I never get, it doesn't bother me because I can see a bee. It doesn't weave and bob like a fly. A fly has a certain agility that a bee doesn't. Bees leave you alone by and large. A fly looks to bother you just because it can. My father taught me a trick, may it rest in peace. You take an undershirt off your body, It's an old European trick, and you swing it overhead. You ever see the old men do that years ago? There's no old men around anymore. There's no, where are the old men in this country? You never see them. When I grew up, there were old men around. There were old men, middle-aged men, young men. Today, it's, everyone tries to look alike. With Viagra and hair transplants, it's like one continuum from age 15 till death. Everyone has dark hair, false teeth, and are sexually, they can be sexually aroused till they go into the coffin. My day, you got old, and that was the end of it. They were old younger, though. The truth is, in my day, 40 was 60. 60 was 40. 80 was 60. I don't know how it happened. So, like a 60-year-old today is like a 40-year-old then, right? And in those days, they died young at 50, 55, a lot of them. It was like 75, 78. Well, they ate like, they didn't know what they were doing. You ever take a look at their diets? Smoked all day, didn't exercise, didn't take a vitamin, no diet. Never heard of a garlic. They drank the wrong alcohol. You know, so, you know, you can kill any good genetic inheritance with that kind of situation. You could see I'm already, you know what I really want to do is have fun. I am having fun. Maybe it's too much fun. Maybe you want me to just do pure, you know, stuff for you. I don't know. I'm not in the mood. I have a friend I heard that I know from 30 years ago, listens to the show avidly in New York. Now, I haven't spoken to him in 20 years, but I heard he listens. And he actually knows that I really, when I told the story of the midget in the seedy hotel in Florida from 25 years ago, there really was a midget. And he really did rob all of my money and his money. And we had to call the police, and the police were in on the take. Remember that story? AC, if you're listening to this show, would you call and confirm that there was a midget in that Fleabag hotel in Miami back in the 60s? It really did exist. I was a naive kid from New York. We took the Greyhound bus down to Florida. We couldn't even afford a $69 air ticket. So it was like intercession, and we took the Greyhound, probably. Greyhound bus to Florida. I remember to this day, it went on. It was like a Midnight Cowboy. Right? It was like Midnight Cowboy. I mean, you know, like through Atlanta, there were like chicken bones in the aisle already. People were throwing food on it. You know, like eating chicken and throwing it on the floor. It got so filthy. Who would use a, you know, you really have to be a hero to use a like a Greyhound toilet. I would never. I'd rather bust inside than. Imagine going into a bus toilet in this day and age. Imagine what kind of needles are in there or whatever. I never, even as a kid, I wouldn't use a bus toilet. My God, the thought of it. The driver was like, I used to tell you there's a restroom in the back of the bus? Forget about it. It's like apartheid, man. Take that bus. It was the best fried chicken I ever tasted in my life was, you know, what do I know? Everything with me is food. So I came from New York, and my mother would try to make fried chicken. It was okay, but I didn't like the oil. It didn't taste good. So I figured I'm in Atlanta at the bus stop. I'll try in the cafeteria. The Greyhound cafeteria in Atlanta. Now I'm going to try the cuisine of the South in this place. What did I know? I was a kid from New York. I had no idea. I figured, all right, I'm in the South. I'm going to try Southern fried chicken. Where am I going to try it? The Greyhound bus terminal. It was excellent. It was unbelievable. Those days there was no KFC. They do a pretty good job, KFC. I've told you that. I haven't eaten it for a while. I got to try it again. I need to, like a hand. Maybe that's why I have a skin condition, not enough grease. You know, I bet you I cut down on the fats too much. My skin became tight. Maybe if I had a high-fat diet. You know what? What if I went to a high-cholesterol diet for a few days? I guarantee, no, I went and got the fish oil today. The Norwegian, the nitrogen-infused $18 variety of cod liver oils from special hippie fish from Norway. Fish that are, they're all socialists. They're not racist. They're not homophobic fish. They danced in certain aquariums. And then they were harvested peacefully in their old age. And their livers were extracted gently by Dr. Death from his jail cell and infused with nitrogen. I actually feel better from it, the fish liver oil. But I don't like it. I grew up on it. Thank God I had fish liver oil as a child. I got to tell you the truth. With the diet I ate, what she put into my mouth, you know how they force feed a goose to make pate? I was close to second in a human form. Well, because they came from poverty in the old world, so they had a little money. The first thing they did was feed you. They didn't intend to give you a heart attack at 12. But it was a cardiotoxic diet. There's no question about it. Ham and eggs for breakfast, meatloaf, a light lunch meatloaf from the night before. And at night, you had a steak or pot roast polished off with an ice cream. Now, if you do that to an average human being today, they're dead in 3 years. Let's say you wanted to take Al-Qaeda members, and you say, well, here's your choice. We're either going to keep you in prison indefinitely with no charges for another 10 years, or we can subject you to Michael Savage's childhood diet for 3 months. And if you don't get a heart attack, you're free. You know what I'm saying? It's a choice. Now, the reason I think I'm still alive is twofold. A, I inherited on the FEMA, the maternal side of the genetics. And B, was the cod liver oil. Because despite the cardiotoxic diet, she gave me cod liver oil. She made me take drops. It was like in a dropper bottle in orange juice. I hated it. I hated the taste of it. It was so disgusting. To this day, it was like remembrances of disgusting things past. It was like Proust in the negative. Drip, drip, take it, it's good for you. I hated it. Take it or I'll kill you. And the scissors came out, or the big knife from the drawer. The soprano scissors were looked at. Her eyes crossed, and I knew I better take that orange juice with the it was less than getting a good wallop, you know, if I didn't take the juice. It was like the Kool-Aid. You look back on these things, it's lucky I didn't wind up in Guyana with Jim Jones. You know, take my Kool-Aid, man. Here's the drops in the Jell-O, you know. What am I talking about? Are you able to follow Free Association when I get into the jazz thing of the show, or should I stop it? Would you like two dimensions, one dimension, or seven dimensions? You got to tell me what you want me to do here. On the line is a guy I have not spoken to in 10, 15 years, but he knows that the one-eyed midget from Miami story is 100% true. AC, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael.
I don't believe it. It's you. It really is you. I cannot believe it. I heard the other day that you are a listener.
A guy called me. He says, you better call your buddy Mike Savage. He says you should call him. Some bartender called me, the very same guy from 6-7 months ago. Mike, the big question is, do you remember how much money you put in the safe in Florida?
No! How much did I... Wait, I'm going to guess. In those days, $35, my entire life savings.
Bingo!
No. Are you serious? Was it 35 bucks?
We put in the money in the morning. We came back 6 o'clock. He didn't know what you were talking about.
Was it not a midget in a shredded midget suit, like a bellhop?
23rd and Collins, man.
23rd and Collins. So is that South Beach today, Arnie?
Well, you know, South Beach, they want to say, is below 21st Street. So it's not officially South Beach, but it's South Miami.
Okay, but did you have bed bugs in your bed?
Of course.
I woke up in the morning, I thought I was hallucinating. There were bed bugs in the hotel. Now, today, I'll bet you that property's worth a pretty penny, no doubt.
But, Mike, you don't remember. You went crazy with the guy. All of a sudden, he immediately found it, or he forgot. He found it.
Wait a minute. Let's slow down. We put the money in, all our money, in the safety deposit box in this flea-bag hotel. We come back. I don't know about no money. I went crazy. Didn't we call for the police?
We threatened to call for the police. The midget eyes started rolling around in his head, the one eye. And all of a sudden, he remembered it was in the back safe.
Oh, I pulled a loud yelling scene in the lobby, right?
Went nuts.
I gave him the command voice and the insanity, and the midget suddenly saw reality. He vaguely remembered the money. Oh, I switched to the other box or something, right? That's right, it reappeared before the police arrived.
He appeared. All of a sudden, he apologized profusely. What can I say? It was incredible. It was
See, but people think I made up the midget in the Miami hotel story. What else? Is it not true, and I won't get too personal, didn't you have an uncle who owned a hotel down there, a rich guy?
You got some memory.
Wait, yes or no? Didn't he own a hotel?
Mickey Hayes,
But didn't he also have a slight habit of stealing the sugar out of other hotels? I remember he owned a hotel worth millions in those days, even in those days millions, which could be, you know, God knows what today, but he had a habit, the sugar and the butter he took from other hotels.
And the plastic spoons.
That's right, you never knew when you might need them, because he could be thrown out of Florida any minute. So without getting into details, I hear you're happily remarried and everything now. I won't get into details.
Michael, I have been wanting to call you for the longest time. I just never, I don't know what to say, but now I get phone calls, call you
up.
Oh,
no, now the next time you're on the West Coast, it's dinner on me. We're going to have a good laugh. Because as I get older, I realize, time, tick-tock, tick-tock. You know, you can't invent old friends, my friend AC.
And you know this, you know, are we on the radio now? Because I don't even know, but...
I hope so. If we're not, I'm out of business.
Let me tell you this. There's one thing, I mean, I go over my Michael's, the times we had together. Why can't I get Hakka cuisine here on the East Coast?
Isn't that amazing? From the years you lived in San Francisco?
You took me on Broadway to the Hakka cuisine. There was all...
Oh, yeah, no, you cannot get Hakka in New York with that Chinese community? You never heard of a Hakka?
All I know is you turned me on to the greatest Chinese food in the world, Hakka.
Well, it's San Francisco has the best Chinese food in the world. There's no question about it. And Hakka cuisine is at the top of the list. It's in the clay pots and the this and that. You know, before you go, I remember one of the best memories of my life in San Francisco was when you lived here before the horrible, and I can't bring it up, let's forget it with the taxi thing, right?
Michael, there's not enough time that we have now. You're on your show.
But
around.
But I was there for you, wasn't I? Was I not there for you?
You showed up to see that I was still alive. I had the apartment on 17th Avenue. I couldn't even go to the bathroom. My hands were all in casts.
Oh, I'd like to. That is that where? Let's not go into that person. I'm sure he's a board of supervisor today. Do you remember the dinner your former paramour threw in that wonderful apartment? A long Sicilian dinner. She had. Remember, she was from Sicily, right? A lovely girl. And she did an Italian meal. Remember I asked for like a Godfather meal and she did it with like 20 people at a long table. Remember that meal?
Fabulous.
See that? I remember all the good stuff. It's all simple things, AC. Let me tell you.
There's so much. And they asked me what music I wanted to play. And I was all of a sudden, I nutted up. You don't play any Latin music for them on the air, do you? They wouldn't understand.
Oh, yes, I do. Once in a while from the private collection. Our old friend Artie sends me CDs I play. Play Power of a V while AC is on. Let's see if it makes him go. It means to life, and to you I say to life. God bless you. Thank God you're still with us on this planet.
Speaking to former presidents, I've spoken to all of them that are living, obviously. President Clinton. I didn't want to get into a Nancy Reagan thing about, you know, doing any seances.
All right. You blew it already. Social worker in a comedy club, day one, line one, social worker in a comedy club. I can hear it. They take away the teleprompter. The guy's up there. He's been a lifetime left-wing social worker with a law degree, an intelligent social worker, far leftist. Now he gets up there and he tries to be cool with the Nancy Reagan seance thing, thinking he's playing to the living room crowd, Bill Ayers, the others, they're smoking dope, and he's trying to do a Lenny Bruce. That's just what America needs right now. The fact of the matter is, don't worry that much about Obama. It's the people around him you better start worrying about. Now, the first one I want you to think about, without necessarily worrying about him, is Rahm Emanuel, the chief of staff. Now, why do I say worry about him? Well, it depends about which way you see things as to whether or not you're going to worry about Rahm Emanuel. I disclosed to you, not having had to do much work, but apparently I was the only one who did it. We went and looked up Rahm Emanuel's background, and I don't know whether to say I'm pleased or unpleased. I'm pleased personally to find out that his Jerusalem-born father was a former member of the Irgun, a militant Israeli organization that some would call a terrorist organization. I would call them a militant Israeli organization. The fact of the matter is they created Israel. So if you think that Rahm Emanuel is a pacifist, I got something new for you that you haven't read anywhere. Obama's chief of staff favors compulsory universal service. Now, you know what's odd? If you, and I'm not pushing my book, although I will do plenty of that later, there are very few political stories in psychological nudity. But one of them says the draft is coming back. I said in the book that no matter who wins the next election, when I wrote this book a couple of months ago, we're going to have a compulsory service. Now, I read this today and almost fell off the chair. Here's Rahm Emanuel, Obama's chief of staff, saying that he favors compulsory universal service. And here it is. He says, it's time for a real Patriot Act that brings out the patriot in all of us. We propose universal civilian service for every young American. Under this plan, all Americans between the ages of 18 and 25 will be asked to serve their country by going through 3 months of basic training, civil defense preparation, and community service. Now, remember, I didn't write this. This is in a book that he wrote, The Plan, Big Ideas for America, that calls for, among other things, compulsory service for all Americans ages 18 to 25. This is from pages 61 to 62 of the book written in 2006, and he continues. Here's how it would work, writes Rahm Emanuel, the chief of staff to Barack Hussein Obama. Young people will know that between the ages of 18 and 25, the nation will enlist them for 3 months of civilian service. They'll be asked to report for 3 months of basic civil defense training in their state or community, where they will learn what to do in the event of biochemical, nuclear, or conventional attack, how to assist others in an evacuation, how to respond when a levee breaks, or were hit by a natural disaster. These young people will be available to address their community's most pressing needs. Agree or disagree, this is a bad or a good idea. This is the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Wait until all the liberals wake up wearing green uniforms, working for the government and not making any money. Wait till these pot-headed bums have to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and shovel manure against the levee, a levee. I'm sorry, I didn't mean that one. Although it's not a bad double entendre. 1-800-449-8255. Cincinnati, Joanne, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I love your story about the autopsy.
Which, my first autopsy?
Yes.
You must have a very weird sense of humor if you love that story. What do you love about an autopsy?
Well, my name is German, and it actually means cemetery, so I guess I'm just...
Oh, very nice. Well, you get a free copy of Psychological Nudity. Stay on the line. I am doing an analysis of American politics right now, not an autopsy of a dead nation. And let us assume right now that it's not a dead nation. What do you mean, whose other dog is on the website? What's this? Michelle, line 8. Go ahead, please. Where do you see another dog on my website?
The pictures that you have in Teddy's Corner, there's a white poodle with him in some of the pictures.
Oh, my God. I had asked my webmaster to put up a picture of my boat ride where I'm holding Teddy at night against the San Francisco skyline. I thought somebody was cheating on my dog. Oh, you mean when you go into the website, blah, blah, blah. The other dog, that's Teddy's girlfriend.
Oh, what's her name?
It's actually his sister. Oh. Teddy's an 11-pound toy poodle. He has a 2-pound sister. Teddy is the movie star. She's the dummy. He can do tricks. He can almost talk. He understands English. She's like Miss Dumbbell. Doesn't know anything. We keep her shut in the attic. We rarely bring her out into public.
Terrible.
Well, you know, just like humans, they're not all equal. You get that one, Michelle? I know Obama would like to tell us that we're all equal, but we're not.
Savage.